format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by an information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Tricia.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Tricia, and I'm an alcoholic. And if you would have told me that I would be a grateful alcoholic, sober, and speaking in a church, no less, back when I was drinking, I don't know what I would have said, but I certainly wouldn't have believed it. It's really nice to be here at this meeting. This meeting has meant so much to me. This meeting was really one of the first ones I came to where I saw a huge proportion of the meeting goers that had what I wanted. You know, they looked happy, they were bright and shiny, and there was just something about the people in this room that drew me in, but also kind of terrified me, so much so that my sponsor, who's here tonight, Tanya, who just celebrated 14 years over the weekend, she was just like, that's where you need to be. That's where you need to plug yourself in at. You know, go to the fellowship events, go to Stepping Stones, go to all these things. You know, I'm blessed that AA has introduced me to some of the best people I've ever met. You know, a lot of whom are here tonight. My friend Allison, my friend Katie, my sponsee Susan, my sponsor Tanya, my boyfriend Jimmy, who's not one of us, but is here supporting. there you go. What it was like was a lot different than what it's like today. What it's like today is, you know, I'm able to think of other people, and I'm able to show up for people and do things and be trusted. You know, I'm able to go to my family events and be trusted around the kids. I'm able to be trusted with borrowing people's cars, with being trusted, being around their wallets. I'm employable, you know, not bragging, but I'm employable. You know, I pay my bills on time. And why I bring that up is that that was a very different, that's very different than what I used to be like. When I did my fifth step with my sponsor, she told me that she was just like, I don't know if I've ever seen a list of resentments this long. She's like, you literally hate everything and everybody. She's like, you could hate like the dirt pile outside on that construction site. And I looked outside and I was just like, well, it's an eyesore. It shouldn't be there. It was there for weeks. They should have the project done by now. Like, I had a knack for finding everything wrong with anything good. You know, like, that was my default setting. And, you know, what it was like, even outside of the alcohol, was just angry. It was hateful. It was chaotic. It was fearful. And that was just what was going on between my ears, you know? It had nothing. I thought for so long it had to do with this person in my past or that person or, you know, this institution or that organization. It had nothing to do with any of them. It was all about my perspective. And so when I put the alcohol down, you know, I'm jumping ahead a bit, but when I put the alcohol down, the problem actually got worse. And I realized that the problem wasn't the alcohol at all. The alcohol was but a symptom. You know, I drank to numb. I drank to feel a sense of ease and comfort that I could not find any other way. And when I think about how I used to drink, you know, I'd be remiss if I came up here and said, you know, it was all hard times. There were obviously good times in the drinking in the beginning. But when I think about the real identity that alcohol had in my life, those times are so outweighed by the times where I ended up embarrassed, the time where I ended up fearful. What did I say? Who did I say it to? What did I post on Facebook and why? You know, like, thank God all the video things were not around when I was still drinking. You know, I've been sober since August 26, 2011. None of like the Snapchat or any of that was around there, thank God. You know, my drinking started off fun, you know, we would go to the city carnival in Ohio where I'm from. We drink in the cornfields every once in a while. But all of a sudden, yes, we were in the back of pickup trucks. It was that cliche. As it grew, you know, it's a progressive disease, and it became slowly more sinister and slowly more negative, and slowly I was losing friends one by one. Slowly I was losing family relationships one by one because I just couldn't stand to see what I was doing anymore, you know, and what I was doing toward the end was drinking round the clock. you know, I remember one wedding. I was invited to a sober wedding the other day. I was super happy to be there and so blessed because it reminded me of what it used to be like to go to weddings. I once went to my cousin's wedding, and by the end of the night, when it was time to go, I'd stolen a bottle of wine from the bar, locked myself in one of the bathroom stalls, and was chugging it to the face. And then, my parents found me later that night swimming fully clothed in my pajamas in the hotel pool. I never knew if I would black out and fall asleep with pizza and Easy Mac and whatever. I never knew what would happen. And so by the grace of God, I found AA on a night where I literally found it on the night that, my world came crashing down. And all my plans, all my little designs, all the ways that I thought I could arrange things to finally make me happy, because that's all that I thought about was me. How can I make me happy? What can I eat? How many yoga classes can I go to? How can I adjust my drinking? You know, all these little things, whether with or without alcohol, all I thought about was how to make myself happy. And the ironic thing was that I was more miserable than ever the more I thought about me. And so on the night that all of my plans came crashing down, I was watching the sunset, and I prayed to God a desperate prayer, and I said, God, I'm out of ideas. I don't know what you want me to do. I'm either going to drink or kill myself, and I know if I drink, it's going to kill me anyway, and so what can I do here? And I'm super entitled, and I really wanted instant gratification. I'm sure I'm the only one in this room. But I was hoping for a rainbow or a shooting star, and I didn't get any of them. And so I was walking home, and I was really ticked off at God. I'm like, I asked for something, and I didn't get anything. And I was so angry with God that I wound up walking the wrong way home. But it was the right way home because I came across a meeting right as it was letting out. And through the course of being around AA and not in AA, I found that that's not the way to do it either. And so I chose the sponsor who intimidated me most, but who certainly had what I wanted. And I knew that the first time I ever heard her pray. And I just thought to myself, my God, how this woman prays, that's what I want. I thought it was her job. I thought it was her cool shoes. You know, I thought it was all these things, when really it was I want that peace and serenity and that position to be able to contribute to society and the people around me even. And she took me through the steps. She took me through the big book, and we highlighted and we underlined and we defined. She had me read Bill's story, circle where I related, circle what scared me. You know, we went through the steps, and the fifth step changed my life profoundly, because finally, someone had held up a mirror to me, and it was someone who really didn't have much to gain. I respected my sponsor to the utmost. I still do. And she told me the truth about myself that day. And for once, I just conceded, and I was just like, you're right. That is who I've been. That is what I've been thinking about this whole time. And you nailed it. So where do we go from here? And she continued to take me through the work. And it's changed my life to such a way where, you know, this morning I was commuting to work, and I saw something hateful about God, actually, carved into the high up subway signs above the part where it drops down. First of all, I was thinking how unsafe that was, that somebody was I don't know how they even got up there to do that. But then I had a moment of profound sympathy, because I was just that's what it was like. I'm this far removed, but I forget that that's what it was like to be so embodied with hate and so embodied with hatred for others and their beliefs and, you know, how dare you believe in God, you know. And what I found through AA is a God of my own understanding, a God which is bigger than people and bigger than certainly myself, thank God. And a God that was able to do the impossible, which was not only to remove my obsession with drinking, because I was a daily drinker from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep every night, but was able to have this process happen where I was able to start giving instead of worrying so much about what I was going to get. And slowly but surely, the selfishness has been dissolving. And slowly but surely, I'm able to contribute and see that I have something to contribute. And, you know, this is my plug for prayer and meditation. I pray in a lot of different ways. I pray when I paint. I pray when I listen to music. I pray sometimes when I'm hugging people, when I'm holding them. I meditate. Sorry. 2 minutes each morning and each night, because that's what I can do. I found that if I do it for 10 minutes or 20 minutes, I can't maintain that. But 2 minutes works for me. And it gives me such a sense of calm where I can sense, like, if I'm aware of my thoughts, I can catch those character defects before I lash out and take them out on others. Because it was never about others. It's always about what's going on inside me. And this program has taught me to address that, and that there is a way to address that, and it's through God and service. And thank you for letting me be of service.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Austin.
Got it. Hi, I'm Austin. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for the opportunity and the honor to speak at this meeting. This meeting means the world to me. This is the first meeting that I came to a little less than a year ago, and it's saved my life. My sobriety date is May 16th, 2016. So in a week, I'll have a year of sobriety. I have a sponsor, Chris G. Atlantic Group is my home group. And I'm living in 10, 11, 12, working on my ninth step. So, what it was like, it was horrible. Life. Yeah, I was never a happy kid from a really young age. I mean, my parents worried about me forever. I was in therapy, everything from like 10 on. And I remember telling my mom and my therapist, like, I think more than other people. So I had my first drink when I was 14. And it was my first, like, 10 drinks. I ended up in the hospital. I was vomiting everywhere. It was not glamorous at all. And I loved it. It stopped the thinking. I didn't think anymore. I didn't care about how embarrassing the stories were because I couldn't remember any of them anyway. So it all was fantastic to me. And that just continued. It was pretty, just in high school you can get away with everything because everybody makes mistakes. It's kind of juvenile. I got arrested a couple of times. But when I went up to Vermont for, I say, quote-unquote school because I didn't go to school, I not having any family, not having anyone around to tell me, hey, you shouldn't do that, I just started drinking every single day, I'd tell my roommate, yeah, I'm going to class, and then just walk right back to the apartment and start drinking. I spent my 21st birthday up there in the drunk tank. Not glamorous again, not a really memorable, well, none of my drinking was really very memorable because I don't remember it. I just got really depressed up there, ended up, trying to commit suicide a few times. My roommate called my family. I moved back to New Jersey and, convinced everyone I was fine, went right back to drinking and doing it all over again. At 25, I had another serious bout with suicide attempts. This time, my family was not so, they didn't believe me anymore. So I was in a psych ward for like 12 days and then followed that with a rehab for 28 days. And again, I did the same thing. I got out of rehab. I convinced everyone, I'm fine. Got a great job. I was feeling good. And I went right back to drinking. Lasted for, I think maybe first year was okay drinking. And then, just all went downhill. I started screwing up at work. I, you know, one night got big trouble because I went down to the cafeteria of the hotel I worked in and fell asleep in a bowl of tuna salad. And they all, I mean, I don't know how I kept the job after that. They all liked me and believed in me, said, you know, please don't drink anymore and you can work here. And so I didn't for like 2 months and then went right back to drinking and eventually lost the job because it all caught up with me. And, you know, then my family was nice enough to say, you know, you could live at home, but just don't drink. We'll give you a job working at the family business. Just don't drink. And I still just wouldn't. It wasn't that I couldn't. I just wouldn't do it. I went right back to drinking. I lied a lot. Lied to my family a lot, you know, got into fights with family, you know, my mom would catch me drunk and I'd say I wasn't, which was stupid, and then fight the next day about how I wasn't drunk. You know, I totaled the car one night and got walked back that night, blacked out, said, it wasn't me, I don't know what you're talking about, and fought with them. So on top of like totaling a car and being just irresponsible, I also had to make them deal with a fight. So yeah, it was just pretty pathetic. So for 4 years it was like that, and I finally just couldn't take it anymore. I told my sister one day, I said, I'm just really not doing well, and she said, I'll take you to an AA meeting. And I didn't say I wasn't doing well with my sobriety, I just said I wasn't doing well. But she said she would take me to an AA meeting. And bless her heart, she did all the research because I wanted to find a meeting that, you know, would get out at a convenient time so I could get home. So, you know, 7 o'clock wasn't really going to work for me because I'd get out at 8 and going back to Jersey, it was just going to be too much time. But she found out the meeting, took me here, and I sat in the back. I don't remember anything that anyone said, and she told me, why don't you get a sponsor? And I was like, I'll do it later, maybe the next time I come to a meeting. And she's like, well, you're here, why don't you just do it? So I did. We walked right down that hallway. I walked right up to Stella and said, she was the sponsorship chair at the time, and I said, I need a sponsor. And my sponsor was standing right next to her, and she said he could take me through the steps. So he asked me the three questions. Will you go to 90 meetings in 90 days? And I was like, I didn't know about one day at a time at the time, but I was like, let's get through one day first before we talk about 90. He asked me if I would sponsor somebody, and I was like, I mean, I was still not sold on the whole 90 meetings, but I said yes. I said yes to everything he asked me. And he asked me if I'd call him in the morning, and I said yes, and I did. I was actually really excited that night. I thought, you know, I'll do this, it'll work. And I called him the next day. He told me to go to a meeting, and I just did. I felt uncomfortable. Usually I said I would have told somebody I would, and then I wouldn't have gone. I felt uncomfortable, but I did. And then I just continued. And I, you know, the Atlantic group, I mean, with the attention to reaching out to the newcomer and fellowship, I mean, this group saved my life. You know, every meeting I went to, and I lived in Jersey, I commuted every day just to come to these meetings, and I would go to fellowship, not get home till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. But I just kept doing it. And it just kept working. I felt less and less uncomfortable. I started going through the steps and started making amends, and, friendships that I thought were over came back. You know, my family, like, this is no joke that they've worried about me since I was 7 years old. I was always troubled. And my dad said it, and then my sister said it, and my mom said it, that, you know, the time that I've been in this group, they haven't worried about me. And that's insane. 26 years of worrying about me, and then 1 year is gone. That's just crazy. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to take other guys through the steps as well. You know, everything that I've learned, just following, standing by your commitments, being honest, everything I've learned from AA and from this group, you know, I've been able to, I enrolled in NYU, because I'd never went to school before. I just lied about it. So, you know, I was worried about that. Like, am I just going to do the same old thing that I did before? And, you know, in a week I'll be able to celebrate a year and I'll also finish my first semester and, like, I'm going to get mostly A's or all A's right now, as long as nothing happens this week. But that's insane. Like, and it's only from everything that I've gotten here that I'm able to do all of that. Just showing up. So I can't stress it enough how just grateful I am to this group. With the year coming up, you know, spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I owe everything to this group and to all of the people in these rooms. I owe everything to you, so thank you so much.
And our main speaker tonight is Anne.
Well, hi. I'm Anne, and I'm an alcoholic. I just want to take a second and just be here and look at all of you who are all here. And this is what we have. We have this moment right now, and the fact that we all choose to be here in this moment right now is such an amazing miracle. I'll stop crying. You won't have to listen to me cry for 30 minutes. Don't worry. Hopefully I'll be humorous occasionally. Let me say, so my sobriety date is June 22nd, 1993. So I obviously got sober when I was 10. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have sponsees. You all like to hear home groups. My home group is Save a Receipt, but I would second that with Saturday Beginners. They kind of go hand in hand. One of those is tonight. That's why I'm never here. Okay. I want to share with you guys a little bit about my day today, in keeping with the theme of what we have is what we have right now, right? So, and then I promise I'll go back and tell you why I should be here, and I'd like to talk about why this program works and what keeps us sober a day at a time. So if anyone did the math, I seem to have put together over 23 years. Okay, a day at a time. So today I'm at Trader Joe's, and I'm shopping. And anyone who goes to Trader Joe's knows if you go to the 14th Street one, there's that long line. You have to shop in line. If you're me, because you need to be efficient. So you're in line and you're shopping, and then the guy who's working the line isn't really paying attention, and so then the line isn't going at a consistent rate for you. And so then when you get in front of the meat, suddenly the line zooms ahead, and I can't get what I need to get, but I need to stay in line, right? But then I get so flustered because I'm not able to get what I need to get in line. So then I step out of the line and I go back over to the beginning of the meet and I look at a lady and I say, I was in line. The line just moved too fast. So now I'm here to be in line again. And this woman looks at me like I'm insane and says, the front of the line, the beginning of the line is back there. And points to the door where the line now had gone to. Now, I willingly pulled myself out of line, but I wanted to be treated differently. I am special, and God forbid, I have to do what everybody else has to do. So that's part of my day today. And I want to say I'm so thrilled hearing these two. You guys were fantastic. And coming up on a year, to hear the miracle of this program happen so quickly is just phenomenal. I'm a slow learner. So some of you all in here might be slow learners too. I don't know. I think this group does fantastic things to kind of get everybody up to speed. But So that was part of my day today, trying to figure out what the heck I should wear up here. If you look at my house, and then I'm like texting, I'm having transportation problems, I'm trying to get a car, and then the car app isn't working. I'm on my bike, riding up here to get here on time. I'm on my bike. And which people who know me know it's kind of funny, I'm always on my bike, but not when I have to go somewhere that I care how I look. Anyway, so now back to the beginning of today. I knew I was coming here, and I knew what I needed to do was start off my day with some meditation and prayer and meditation. And now, for the last number of years, I've really enjoyed the free 21-day experience with Oprah and Deepak. But see, now, I don't want to pay for meditation. And so when my 21 days end, I'm at a loss. Now, here's the thing. You can actually buy the CD. They stream straight to your phone if you'd like the experience again. If you'd like to have something aid you in meditation, I want to be special, and I'm waiting for somehow it to happen for me. Anyway, needless to say, today it took me coming here to go, okay, which experiences did I like, and actually buy them so I could sit and meditate. So I like help in meditating. I like to hear Oprah tell me what to do. And I love Deepak. And then I get my meditation. I like the bird sounds and the music. Now, others of you may not meditate in the same way, and that's okay, because nobody tells us we have to do anything one particular way. The fact that I'm standing in a church in front of all of you talking about meditation is a miracle. So now let me rewind. I grew up in a family, a loving family, truly. My parents were married until my mom died a couple years ago. But they were also academics. And I say the but because my family is a family of thinkers. And so I have my dad, the experimental physicist, my mother, the chemist, my older brother, the software engineer, my second brother, an orthopedic surgeon, and then there's me. And my entire life, it always felt like, and then there's Anne. Now, Anne is smart and did well in school, but Anne did not aspire to do the things that they wanted to do. And the other thing is, Anne also felt a lot. You know that sense of, and I heard here, feelings were always happening for me. And I always felt like I wasn't a part of. And I always felt like the world, from the inside looking out, I was so separate and afraid. I'd never admit that I was afraid, but separate and different. And so that's the life that I grew up in. And, you know, my parents, neither of them alcoholics. My brothers, who's to say, but I don't think so. Now, I could make comments about my mother's parents. All right, they probably drank a fair amount, and they're gone now. And, you know, they had their old-fashioned at 3 p.m. Might move a little earlier, you know. But it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. What I know is the first time I had a drink, all of a sudden, I felt okay. So here's a big part of my story, or just the beginning of my story, I will say. The first time I drank, I was with my friend Dottie, and we pulled all the booze out of her dad's liquor cabinet. And I was a lifeguard at the neighborhood pool. We thought it would be fun to try the different things. So we literally tried all the different stuff. I landed on orange Curacao. That seemed to be the thing that I was really into. Yum. And I drank it, and then we went down to the pool where we worked. Now, by the time I got to the pool, I was so just, you know, drunk that I was unable to function, and I fell in the pool, and then I had to be saved by the lifeguards that were my coworkers. And then I proceeded to go to the bathroom area and throw up everywhere. And do you know what the side job was for the lifeguards? To clean the bathroom. So that was my first time I drank. It really didn't get better. You know, I would argue that it did, but really all I was doing was always chasing that feeling of being not in myself, not in my body, somewhere else, something else, just not here, right? So when I talk about being present, I didn't know until I got sober, and I'm going to say I didn't know until I had double-digit sobriety anything about being present. So, like I said, long, long, slow process for me. So then I continued to be the party girl, and I don't really know that I had that much fun, and I don't know that other people had that much fun around me, but, you know, I was high functioning, meaning I did really well in school. I went to graduate school. I was all about getting great grades. I was this like there was definitely a side that the world saw, and then a side that was reality. And I did a really good job of that Jekyll and Hyde thing. I had my friends that my other friends didn't know anything about, because I always wanted to be with that other group that was fun, but then this world didn't know anything about it, you know. So now I'm going to move on to, okay, so I keep drinking, and then part of my story does involve some drugs, and I just want to say what happened for me that was a great gift is it sped up my drinking. Because I want to say my first love and my last love was alcohol, but I couldn't admit that. I just couldn't admit that because other people can drink. So, you know, whereas it seemed like with drugs, it just seemed like, well, people can't handle that. So it was actually easier for me initially to see that as an issue, but what took me down was booze. There's no question. So throughout the drinking, let's see, at some point I find myself married to somebody. He drank worse than I did. I missed the party from the family the day after the wedding. We just didn't show up. There were four mysterious people at my wedding party that my parents didn't know. It was said drug dealer. So that was like my world, right? I did geographics. So I moved in the middle of the night. I moved from L.A. to New York with that husband. I want to say at some point, because things were not good with us, there were police were called many times. Restraining orders happened. Violence happened. And I want to say violence happened on both sides. I want to be honest about that. Because when I drank, I was mean. He was mean, I was mean, it was mean, you know? And at some point, I stopped drinking for 30 days. I don't know why. Got this idea. I'm going to stop drinking for 30 days. But somewhere in that 30 days, I was like, I don't want to be married to this man. So I went and I got a lawyer without him knowing. And then we had a car. We had moved from L.A. to New York. We had a car. And I said we couldn't sell the car. It was a truck. And the only way to sell it would be if he drove it down to Louisiana where my family was. And that would be how we would get rid of the car. Well, he was not even a day out of New York when he called. And he goes, you don't ever want me back, do you? So that was like the life that I lived. And I said, no. I'd already gotten the lawyer at that point. I was like, we're done. My life got a little better briefly, but then I started drinking again. Cause why not? He was the problem. Drinking wasn't the problem. Then I got my dream job. That was fantastic. I was doing what I loved and getting, I was being paid for what I loved, and I couldn't stop drinking. Amazing. So wait a minute. What's that about? Then God did me a favor, and I think that might be the first time I mentioned God here. I want to say that God for me throughout my drinking did not exist. And somewhere along the way, I made the decision that God had abandoned me, which I today believe is not true. But at the time I did. So what I decided is that I was going to say I was agnostic. Because agnostic, you're not really making a choice. I don't have to definitively say I'm an atheist, because that felt really strong. My grandmother was an atheist, but she died an atheist. God bless her. On the other hand, I couldn't believe that God would allow me to get in the kind of predicaments that I got into. I didn't believe that God was there for me. I couldn't stop drinking, all that stuff, right? So I was like, I'm an agnostic. Well, so God did me a solid and let go of that job for me. Now, when I got sober, guys, I could not say I was fired. I had to say I was let go. And then I also had to explain for about 2 minutes why I was let go. And the reality is I got fired. Doesn't matter at all why. Because what happened is I went on a 30-day bender that ended out with me doing some really serious dry goods with somebody that I had worked with. And then ultimately that spiraled down to a place where, and this is the kicker, I signed myself into rehab 2 hours out of Manhattan in a blackout. It's fun, right? So I came to out of a blackout having signed myself into rehab. And I looked at my bag. Some of you have heard this before, but it explains my insanity. It brings me to step two. Step two. It's over there. I looked at my bag, and there were no socks. And the only thing I could do was vaguely recall that a friend of mine in New York had somehow been with me and called him and said, where are my socks? I didn't say, where am I? I didn't say, what happened? I said, where are my socks? Not that politely. And his response was, you wouldn't let me pack you socks. And I was like, what? And he said, no, you said where you were going to be free. So I was like, but you listened to me? You listened to me. Now, I want to say, thankfully that blackout turned into somewhat of a brownout. And one of the things I remember is that my brother was in his residency at Yale at the time, and he was called. And he came and got me and drove me up there, and he didn't know what to do. So he took me to the addiction specialist that he knew at the hospital. And I sat in that room, and I started telling my story, which I'd never told, to this guy. And remember, I'm the feeler. My family doesn't feel anything. And I looked over into the corner, and my brother was sitting there with tears just streaming down his face, watching, listening to the pain that his little sister had been in. And he had no idea, because I hid it. I hid it from everybody. And I remember that now, and I'm so grateful, because I have a relationship with that man today. I don't talk to him enough. My family's really bad about talking to each other. But that said, I do love him. We have different political views, but I still love him. Thank God, right? So I find myself in this rehab. And now, still willful as heck. And I just want to say, so here I am, I'm counting days, and I find myself having a job interview I need to come to New York for. So I went out of rehab, and I came in for the job interview. Crazy. I lived on the Lower East Side, which is now where I live, which is amazing. And I found myself on the Upper East Side, because I didn't think you could go to meetings on the Lower East Side. And I remember being in a meeting, and I was telling my story about the whole being in a blackout thing, and this woman says to me, that I've never seen again, she says to me, wow, your higher power was really looking out for you. And I was like, what? You know, it was the first time it hit me that there was something greater than me taking care of me through all of this. And it's taken me years now to really have any understanding of that. But you know what? I remember hearing from people, we wish you a slow recovery. And being like, who wants a slow recovery? Well, what's the alternative? Right? It's a day at a time. What's the rush? It's like, what's the rush? I mean, yes, it's important to get through the steps. And it's important to live in 10, 11, and 12. And it's important to, you know, do your... do all of the things that we do in here to stay sober a day at a time. But I hope to stay sober for the rest of my life. I want to share a little bit of a cautionary tale with you. I'm here with my sponsor, who I love dearly, who has helped me vastly. And she and I have a relatively new relationship. It's been in the last 3.5-4 years. And the reason is because a sponsor that I had for years, after 30-something years, went out on Demerol and had a doctor prescribe for her Demerol to shoot up because of her pain. And I have watched somebody who was there for me so many years ago go through the devastation of this disease. She's alive, and she doesn't go to meetings, and she doesn't believe in us so much anymore. She has 2 children who won't talk to her. And the only people who show up for her are the women who used to be her sponsees. Although at this point, we're all very, she's now taking morphine, and it's challenging, to say the least. My job is to try to be of service and show up as best I can in a healthy way, which is what I do today. So I know it's a daily reprieve. It is a daily reprieve contingent upon my spiritual condition. So how do I have a spiritual condition? For anyone here who dislikes the word God, you are sitting in a church, but that's okay. And you don't have to love the word God. You can change it to whatever you want. For me, it has taken a long time, and I'm really okay with the word God now. It has taken me going through those steps a few times. It has truly taken me going through the steps with sponsees, listening to their stories, and having them listen to me as I share my experience, strength, and hope with them. When I do that, and I see that light bulb go off, or I see the relationship amend with the family member, or whatever, life on life's terms. So all of these phrases that when I came in here, I was like, oh, God, please, you know, think upside down. What are you talking about? Easy does it. You know, I want to, as long as we do not drink a day at a time, We're already successful. But then on top of that, if we really do use the tools of the program, and the tools of the program are these 12 steps. They are those first 165 pages of the big book, right? And reading them. And now I said that, and I'm like, 165, 164. See? Thank you. I can occasionally big book thump, but generally I don't. But I have found reading and rereading that book, listening to that miracle that was these two men who got together and then came up with this wacky idea that if we do 1, 2, 3, big time, 4 and 5, and then move on into 6 and 7. If we then do our 8 and 9, and then go out and be of service, we have a shot. And these guys came up with this. Now, when I came in, I was so mad about how the book all said he, you know, and it was not feminist at all. And, you know, can't we change that? I laugh now. I laugh. So let me tell you a little bit about my day, my life today. So I'm married to another alcoholic. He's sober. He's here. We have a 12-year-old. She's growing up in a sober yet alcoholic home. That was an illuminating thought that was recently passed on to me. She's phenomenal and is teaching me everything God needs me to learn that I'm incapable of learning on my own. I was one of those people who was a serial monogamist. I'd stay in a relationship as long as I could, and then I'd leave, but I always left. And my husband had heard that before, but chose to marry me anyway. And we're still here, right? When I came in here, I thought, okay, if I get a few days together, I'm going to get... I moved to L.A. with like 47 days or something. And a group of ladies told me, you know, we don't do any major changes in our first year. And I said, I'm not. I'm just moving to L.A. An example of me, right? I forgot what I was going to say about that. Oh, I've done so well following my train of thought. thank you. I was distracted thinking about how much time I had left and thinking about what gems I would leave you with. Because I have to say, no matter what, no matter how hard I work my program, what I do, I still have ego. And, selfish, self-centered to the core. And what this program teaches me is how to be of service and how to get out of myself no matter what. And I say that like that because you know how much you don't want to sometimes. You know when the phone rings and you're like, really? Do I really want to talk to that sponsee right now? Sometimes I don't. But then, thank God, I have this program because I call them back. And I do answer the phone. I've heard this from somebody in here, and I get to hear gems from my sponsee's sponsor. I mean, from my husband's sponsor on occasion. And being of service is when you're inconvenienced. That's helped me a lot. Because then I like look at the phone and go, I'm inconvenienced. You know? Right? Oh, what I was going to say, the train of thought that I'll get back to, is there was a promises meeting in Malibu. And I loved it because it talked about the promises. And I wanted them so badly. And it had famous people. So I wanted to go to that meeting, right? And I truly thought that once I got the promises, I would get, and what they meant to me was that I would have fame and fortune and great success in every outer thing that all of what I've always perceived the world to think of as success. And what I've learned as I continue to stay here is that, I mean, maybe that is success for whoever. My success is not drinking or using a day at a time and being a useful member of our group and helping another alcoholic. My primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. Now, you know, I gave up my passes for whatever other kind of, prizes I'm supposed to be getting. But I want to say I've gotten the cash and prizes. They're just different than what I thought they would be. I want to end with telling you about one of the greatest gifts I got. I had a tumultuous relationship with my mother. That is to put it mildly for those who know her. And I had to go through a lot of amends process with her and a lot of working on my part and a lot of working on my side and a lot of like really trying to learn how to stop expecting her to be someone she was not. The reality is my mother loved me. unconditionally as best as she could. Her unconditional was not the same as mine, but it was unconditional. In the last few years of her life, I made a decision to start going with my daughter down to, they lived in Louisiana, and spending time there. My husband thought I was insane. I was like, I'm going to spend like a month down in Louisiana. And he goes, oh my God. And I was like, I actually think it'd be better if you're not there. And because it's easier for me to deal with the family dynamic without. And the last few years, I repaired that relationship. My daughter had a really positive relationship with her mother, with her grandmother. And I was able to love her for her. And she was able to love me for me. My mom suddenly died almost 2 years ago. And by suddenly, I mean within less than a week of us knowing she was going to die. I'm the last person who saw her, other than a nurse. And I have zero regrets. I feel as if everything was clear. I know that she's wherever she is. And I know that I did the best I possibly could. And I know that it was a gift of this program. So you guys showing up here does this for me. This is thank you. It isn't about me being up here. It really is about all of you showing up. If you're new and counting days and anything I said seems overwhelming or kooky, just ignore it. But do get a sponsor and don't drink a day at a time and keep showing up. You know, this is a miracle. We are all miracles. Thank you so much for asking me, Randy. Thank you.